that megaphone of the prophet Haggai was pointed at the people of God right after they returned from exile in Babylon. So we might expect to hear from the background of that scene the sound of sheer celebration. A people flooding the streets of Jerusalem, having a parade of families gathered around the tables for feasts, of people jumping up and down and throwing streamers into the air. But instead, all we hear is the sound of faint disappointment. For the people of God were exiled about 50 years in Babylon, which means those that were taken from Jerusalem to go live in Babylon, many of them did not live long enough to return. And those that were born in Babylon had never walked through the gates of the city of Jerusalem or laid eyes on the temple. And when they got back, the temple was still sitting there in ruins. It had been destroyed and left unattended, which means it was not what they remembered, or it wasn't what they expected. And not only that, the people were still recovering from that sense of abandonment living in exile, and the temple was supposed to be a symbol of God's faithfulness to them. So when it was time to rebuild, they hesitated. That they had learned to live without it, and they were not sure how it fit within their picture of faith or life. So the prophet is trying to reinvigorate them, to give them a new vision, to regain a sense of God's presence in their lives. And I think Haggai would have resonated with those words by Barbara Brown Taylor, where she says, "The problem is that many of the people in need of saving are in the churches. And at least part of what they need saving from is the idea that God sees the world the way they do." That Haggai was worried that the people were locked in the tragedy and heartache of the past, and they could not see God's vision for the future. And if Haggai could have been there when Jesus was arguing back and forth with the Sadducees, I think he would have had that strange feeling of deja vu. Because right before Jesus was engaged in arguing with the Sadducees, just moments before he is poised, ready to enter the city of Jerusalem in that triumphal entry that we call Palm Sunday, where people are waving palm branches in the air, throwing streamers left and right, throwing their coats on the ground. But if we look closely at Jesus' eyes, there are tears. Because Jesus is crying over the city of Jerusalem. It has become something it was not meant to be. That when people looked upon the temple, their eyes were supposed to be turned towards God, invoking humility, faith, and gratitude. Instead, it had become a den of robbers. That's why Jesus goes in and he overturns the tables of the money changers. He says, "This house of God is meant to be a house of prayer for all nations. Instead, it's the people in the temple who need saving. They need saving from the fact that they think God sees the world the same way they do. If you have ever watched a soccer game, you know how hard it can be to figure out which team has possession of the ball. It's not like football, where the quarterback's standing there right behind the center, ready for him to hike it. It's not even like baseball, where the pitcher is standing up there on the mound, winding up, ready to throw a curveball to the other team. It's not even like tennis, where the ball goes back and forth, but at least you know who has the serve. In soccer, even the person with the ball is constantly chasing it. And our faith is more like soccer, because we never have possession of God. We are always learning and seeking to see this world the way God sees it. And the Sadducees, which was a segment of Judaism that did not believe in resurrection, overheard Jesus talking about new life in the face of death. So they set this trap for him. They proposed this scenario. You know, Jesus, what happens if a man's brother dies and he marries his wife? Because that was the custom of the day. And you know, what if this happens 6 more times? What does that mean for resurrection? Well, Jesus quietly sidesteps this trap. And he reminds them, you are not asking the right question. We are supposed to see the world the way God does, not the other way around. You cannot think of resurrection only with its impact upon death. Resurrection is about the living. It's about new creation. It's about redeeming everything that is broken. It is about living in new ways with the very hope that nothing, not even death, can stand in the way of the love of God. Think about how that changes life and faith, to see this world the way God does. That Haggai would have had deja vu, because the people are standing there looking at the temple in ruins, that they can only see what is. They cannot see what could be. And then with the people standing there, at best shrugging their shoulders, God says, I am with you. It is that amazing, life-changing power of knowing we are not alone. It's like the child who is deathly afraid of the dark, sitting up at night, but somehow she finds courage in knowing that a parent is sitting at the end of the bed. Or it's that familiar hand that we clench so tightly as we listen to the doctor describe a scary diagnosis. Or perhaps it's just the phone call we make on the way home from work so we can hear that familiar voice say, I am thinking about you. That they are the people that change how we see things, that disrupt and transform how we perceive our lives and this world, both what is and what could be. I know you have probably walked through those tourist traps. You know, the gift shop at the end of the museum that you have to walk through to get to the exit. They are full of boundless trinkets to buy. Whether it's the mugs or the magnets, the commemorative plates or lapel pins. And in places where the temperatures are colder, they even have snow globes. And I do not know what they put in those things, but it's quite mesmerizing. Shaking them up, turning them over, watching the snow fall to the ground. We could look at them for hours. But as they capture our attention, we have to remember that no matter how we hold it up, it is a rather small view of the landscape. And God calls us to see more of this world and our lives in the way God sees it. That's very different from a panoramic view. I used to love when my friends would go on these trips to see places like the Grand Canyon. And they would take with them those disposable cameras. Think back. And they'd take all these different shots, frame after frame, picture after picture. And then they'd come home. And after a week of getting the pictures developed, they'd come back to their room and tape them side by side, picture by picture, frame by frame, that it was this endless view of the landscape. And the stories of our faith and the life of Jesus give us this panoramic view of God that changes the vision we might have for this world and for our lives. Each and every morning when we get up, after we get ready for the day, we might have what we call our breakfast prayers. It is all the concerns that we have for that day. All the things that need to get done, everything that we're worried about that might happen that day that we want to prevent, everything that is pressing, everything that is in front of us, everything wrapped up in our to-do list and weekly routine. And those things are quite important. Even when the prophet Haggai is trying to get the people to see this greater vision of rebuilding the temple, they are still busy on Tuesday afternoon planting gardens and tending to their families. But every night, we also have our 2 a.m. prayers. They are the concerns that keep us up at night, that create that knot in our stomach, that headache in the back of our head, the problems that are not as easy to solve. Many times they feel out of our hands, but they mean so much. They're the concerns that we have for our children, our grandchildren, and how they will face the world around them. They're the worries that we have for the church and how it will respond to what is most needed. They are the concerns that keep us up at night. And Jesus reminds us that we are to ask the right questions, to see this world the way God sees it, to hope and pray and work for those same things. And the good news is, as Leslie Weatherhead reminds us, big doors swing on small hinges. That our 2 a.m. prayers swing on the hinges of the ways of Jesus. On patience and perseverance. on showing up and reaching out, on building community and serving community, on telling our story and extending our hand, on standing on the side of grace and trusting in the power of compassion. That new life is about right now. And that God is always with us. Amen.